The Nine Attributes of the Buddha by Sele Susila. Part 2, Chapter 7. Satta Deva Manusanam, Teacher of Gods and Humans. In Pali, Satta means teacher, Deva means gods, and Manusa means human being or men. The Buddha is the teacher of gods and men. Of gods and men denotes all people who are capable of progress. The Buddha is one who teaches about the present life, future lives, absolute truth, suffering, and the end of suffering, and other themes in order to guide humans, gods, and Brahmas. After hearing his teaching, most people are willing to give up their attachment to sensual pleasures, which causes moral decline, and instead find encouragement to walk the path until the final goal, Nibbana, is reached. Thus, the Buddha is the teacher of gods and humans. The Buddha is also one with an all-knowing mind. He can see the characteristics and tendencies of all beings clearly. He skillfully employs various meditation subjects, selecting the appropriate one for each being, and helps guide them towards enlightenment. Such special abilities help his disciples to reach the path of enlightenment in a very short time, such as in the cases of Kisa Gotami and Tisa Tara. The Enlightenment of Kisa Gotami. The way Buddha guided Kisa Gotami out of her sorrow is amazingly skillful. Kisa Gotami was very depressed after her beloved son died. Because she could not accept his death, she took his dead body everywhere to search for medicine to revive him. A good and wise man told her to go see the Buddha. The Buddha told her, "If you can get a handful of mustard seeds, I will make your son alive again, but they must come from a home where there has been no death." Kisa Gotami was overjoyed to hear the advice of the Buddha. She walked from one house to the next, asking for mustard seeds. Even though mustard seeds were an ordinary cooking spice used in India, and though everyone was willing to give her a handful of them, no matter how many houses she visited, she could not find one in which no one had died. Kisa Gotami at last realized that death was something that everyone encounters. As a human, one must experience death, and there is no exception for her beloved son. She then buried her son's corpse and went back to see the Buddha. The Buddha spoke the following verses to her. Quote, "When a person's mind is deeply attached, infatuated with sons and cattle, death grabs him and carries him away, as a flood does a sleeping village." End quote. Dhammapada 287. On hearing this verse, insight into things as they really are arose in her, and she became a stream enterer. The Liberation of Tisa Tara. The loving kindness and compassion of the Buddha towards all beings was incomparable, boundless, and impartial. Even though he was a great and widely respected teacher, he still humbled himself to give services to others, as in the time he personally washed and tended to a seriously ill disciple. Once there was a seriously ill bhikkhu named Puttigatha Tisa. His illness caused boils that appeared all over his body, and that grew bigger and bigger until they burst and oozed. That morning, the Buddha observed with the divine eye that Tisa had the potential to attain arahatship, but in his current condition, he was like a piece of pure gold in mud. The gold could not shine as it should. The Buddha thought, "All of Tisa's friends cannot bear it anymore, and they have all left him. I am the only one who can help him. But before curing his mental suffering, I have to first cure his physical suffering." Then the Buddha boiled water and went to the room where Tisa was lying. Other bhikkhus, seeing this, came hurriedly to the Buddha and offered to help. The Buddha asked them to carry Tisa out of the room, where they washed and cleaned him as well as his robes. The Buddha did not feel loathing or disgust due to the pus, nor the rotten smell coming from Tisa's body. He gently bathed Tisa, dried his body, cleansed his sores, and helped him to put on clean robes. The Blessed One knew that if Tisa's body was cleaned, his mind would be relieved and happy, and that would be an appropriate moment to listen to the Dhamma. Thereafter, the Blessed One expounded the Dhamma that was suitable to his temperament. Quote, "All too soon this body will lie on the earth, cast aside, lifeless, like a useless log." End quote. Dhammapada 41. After hearing this teaching by the Buddha, Tisa became an arahat. The Buddha used this opportunity to teach his disciples to help each other, and especially those who are ill. The Blessed One said, "Monks, you have no mother, you have no father, who might tend to you. If you don't tend to one another, who then will tend to you? Whoever would tend to me should tend to the sick." We can see the noble qualities of the Buddha in this example. The Buddha did not discriminate against beings because they were good or bad, poor or rich, clever or foolish, because the Buddha fully understood that the different qualities of beings are only the result of their own karma. Thus, the Buddha treated everyone equally, without discriminating against any being, not even those who opposed the Dhamma or tried to harm him. The Buddha often advised his lay disciples who had left the wrong doctrines of other teachers to continue financially supporting and respecting their previous teachers. The Buddha extended his loving kindness and compassion to all beings. The love he gave to Devadatta, who tried to harm him several times, is the same as the love he gave to his own son, Rahula. The Buddha and his disciples traveled from one town to another, from one city to another, on their compassionate and loving mission to help all beings. The teaching of doing no evil and performing good deeds. The Buddha understood the suffering of all beings, especially the beings dwelling in the lower, woeful states of hell, hungry ghosts, asuras, and animal realms. The opportunity to become freed from these deprived states and attain rebirth in a fortunate state is extremely rare, as the Buddha illustrated with a simile in which he compared the amount of soil under his fingernail, the relatively small number of beings in fortunate destinations, with the amount of soil in the entire earth, the number of beings in the lower realms. Further, in the states of deprivation, there is no chance to make good karma. Hell beings endure great torment. Their suffering seems endless. In the animal kingdom, the law of the jungle reigns. There is mutual killing, and morality is unknown. The Buddha, out of compassion, untiringly exhorted people to refrain from unwholesome actions of body, speech, and mind, such as killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, divisive speech, being a fraud, or taking intoxicating drinks or drugs. These unwholesome actions lead to carelessness, covetousness, hatred, denying the effects of karma, and more. Abandoning unwholesome actions, people live free from self-blame and societal blame, and live happily without remorse. When faced with death, they do not grieve, nor are they tormented or grow delirious. What awaits them in the future is a blissful destination. When a person has been established in avoiding unwholesome akusala actions, the Blessed One would further encourage the person to perform wholesome kusala actions, such as generosity, morality, respecting elders who are worthy of respect, giving service to the Sangha and the poor, and listening to good Dhamma in order to deepen right view. These good deeds gladden the heart of the doer and ensure peace in the society. When such good people come down with a serious disease, they neither grieve nor grow delirious. They are not afraid of death, as they know they are destined to a pleasant existence hereafter. It is taught, quote, "There is the case of a person who has done what is good, has done what is skillful, has given protection to those in fear, and has not done what is evil, savage, or cruel. Then he comes down with a serious disease. As he comes down with a serious disease, a thought occurs to him. I have done what is good, have done what is skillful, have given protection to those in fear, and I have not done what is evil, savage, or cruel. To the extent that there is a destination for those who have done what is good, what is skillful, have given protection to those in fear, and have not done what is evil, savage, or cruel, that's where I'm headed after death." He does not grieve, is not tormented, does not weep, beat his breast, or grow delirious. This, too, is a person who, subject to death, is not afraid or in terror of death. End quote. Anguttara Nikaya 4.184. Purifying one's mind through concentration and insight meditation. In addition, the Blessed One taught us how to use concentration meditation to control the restless mind, a mind that likes to wander about or indulge in mental proliferation, papancha. Concentration meditation, samatha, is a practice developed through consistency and right resolve and entails focusing the mind on a single object, thus training the mind to be undistracted and bringing it to a tranquil state. Without mindfulness to restrain it and bind it to a meditation subject, such as the breath, anapanasati, the untrained mind, which is accustomed to wandering about over countless rebirths, tends to commit evil. As the Dhammapada states, he who is slow in doing good, his mind delights in evil. Dhammapada 1:16. The Buddha expounded many meditation subjects, such as mindfulness of breathing, the skeleton, the four elements, the impurity of the 32 body parts, the four divine abodes of loving-kindness, compassion, appreciative joy, and equanimity, and various color kasinas that practitioners can use to tame the restless mind and further develop the mind to total tranquility. The Buddha taught these various meditation subjects to suit the different temperaments, charita, of beings. According to the Abhidhamma, there are six types of temperaments of beings. 1. The lustful. 2. The hateful. 3. The deluded. 4. The faithful. 5. The intellectual. And 6. The discursive. For example, the Buddha taught a person with a lustful temperament to contemplate the stages of decomposition of a corpse or the impurity of the 32 parts of the body, head hair, body hair, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, sinews, bones, etc. Recall the story of how the Buddha redirected the bhikkhu who was lovesick for Shirima in just this way. These methods are used to help people with a lustful temperament to develop detachment toward their own body and the bodies of others. The Buddha taught a person of hateful temperament to contemplate the four divine abodes, Brahmaviharas, which are loving-kindness, compassion, appreciative joy, and equanimity. Loving-kindness is a universal love that wishes all beings to be happy. When loving-kindness meditation is developed, ill will be abandoned. Compassion means to feel sympathy when seeing a helpless and suffering person, and to wish to ease the suffering of that person. When compassion meditation is developed, cruelty will be abandoned. Appreciative joy is having joy when others are successful. When appreciative joy meditation is developed, discontentment will be abandoned. Equanimity means to understand wisely that all beings are the owners of their actions, and the heirs of their actions, and that their successes and failures, their happiness and suffering, are related to or dependent upon their own actions. When equanimity meditation is developed, aversion will be abandoned. Majjhima Nikaya 62. For a person of deluded temperament, and for one of restless mind, mindfulness of breathing, anapanasati, is the most suitable subject. One takes in-breathing and out-breathing as the object of mindfulness and gradually develops concentration until the mind fully absorbs on the breath. For those of a faithful temperament, to recollect the qualities of the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, and to recollect their own generosity is the best way to meditate. How do you recollect your own generosity? You reflect thus, "It is a gain, a great gain for me, that, among people overcome with the stain of possessiveness, I live at home, my awareness cleansed of the stain of possessiveness, freely generous, open-handed, delighting in being magnanimous, responsive to requests, delighting in the distribution of alms." The Buddha said that any time a disciple is recollecting generosity, his mind is not overcome with passion, not overcome with aversion, not overcome with delusion. His mind heads straight, based on generosity. Anguttara Nikaya 11:13. By learning to savor one's generosity and feel gladness at the merit that results, joy arises. Joy leads to tranquility, and tranquility leads to concentration. For those who are of intelligent temperament, the most suitable object is contemplation of the four elements, that is, contemplating that one's body is composed of the four primary elements, earth, water, fire, and air, wind, elements. Sometimes the space and mind elements are added, making it six elements. This is how the Buddha taught Paccusati, as described in the Majjhima Nikaya 140. When the restless mind is calmed and brought to unification by focusing it on a single object, ekagata, it becomes focused, light, soft, easy to direct, clear, and still. The concentrated mind can clearly see the nature of the five aggregates, or the characteristics of the mind and body as they really are. In the Samadhi Sutta, the Blessed One said, quote, "Bhikkhus, develop concentration. A bhikkhu who is concentrated understands things as they really are. And what does he understand as it really is?" the origin and passing away of the five aggregates. End quote. Samyutta Nikaya 22.5. Based on concentration, the Blessed One taught us to comprehend the five aggregates, mind and body, and to see clearly what they are, not a permanent self or person. The person or self is composed of nothing but the five aggregates, which exist only due to causes and conditions. There is nothing but the interplay of physical form, feeling, perception, mental formations, and consciousness. There is no self or I as a controller or omnipotent master. The Blessed One would guide a meditator further to observe the cause of the arising of the five aggregates. The current five aggregates do not just accidentally arise, nor is there a supernatural being who creates them, but it is the ignorance, craving, clinging, formations, and karma of former lives that are the root cause of their existence. As long as the taints, asavas, are not destroyed, present ignorance, craving, clinging, formations, and karma will continue to cause the arising of five aggregates in the next life. The 12 links of dependent origination, paticca samuppada, indicate that with ignorance as condition, formations arise. With formations as condition, consciousness arises. With consciousness as condition, mentality and materiality arise. With mentality and materiality as condition, six sense bases arise. With six sense bases as condition, contact arises. With contact as condition, feeling arises. With feeling as condition, craving arises. With craving as condition, clinging arises. With clinging as condition, becoming arises. With becoming as condition, birth arises. With birth as condition, aging, sickness, and death arise. Thus arises the whole mass of suffering. Ignorance, craving, and clinging in the previous life are the round of defilement, kilesa vata. Formations and kama comprise the round of kama, kama vata. The present consciousness, mind and body, the six sense bases, contact and feeling, are the round of result, vipaka vata. In this present life, due to ignorance of the Four Noble Truths, untaught worldlings crave for sensual pleasure and further cling to the continuity of life, the round of defilement. Therefore, they continue to commit good and bad actions, kama, and leave behind karmic energy or potential, round of karma. When this karmic energy meets with favorable conditions to produce results, a new life consisting of mind and body springs up as a new existence, which is resultant karma, round of result. Thus, because of the round of defilements, a round of karma is caused. This round of karma further leads to the round of result. The three rounds of dependent origination will continue to revolve so long as the round of defilement is not extinguished. Understanding that all worldly phenomena are dependently originated, i.e., with the arising of this, that arises, with the cessation of this, that ceases, it is apparent that, with the cessation of ignorance, formations cease, with the cessation of formations, consciousness ceases, with the cessation of consciousness, mentality and materiality cease. With the cessation of mentality and materiality, the six sense bases cease. With the cessation of the six sense bases, contact ceases. Feeling ceases. Craving ceases. Clinging ceases. And becoming ceases. With the cessation of becoming, there will be no birth. When there is no birth, then aging, sickness, and death will not occur. Thus, the whole mass of suffering ceases. Understanding how, with the cessation of ignorance and craving, the whole cycle of dependent origination comes to an end, an ardent meditator works to eliminate the root cause, ignorance. This can be achieved by viewing the five aggregates with right resolve. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. The endless arising and ceasing of the aggregates, or mentality and materiality, is impermanence. Being continually oppressed by arising and ceasing is suffering, and the quality of experience being uncontrollable, conditioned, and inconstant is not self. Below is the common line of questioning the Buddha posed to his followers that would lead them to awakening. What do you think, monk? Are form, feeling, perception, mental formations, and consciousness constant or inconstant? Inconstant, Master Gotama. Is what is inconstant stressful or easeful, stressful, Master Gotama? Is what is impermanent, suffering, and subject to change fit to be regarded thus? This is mine. This I am. This is myself. Majjhima Nikaya, 147. When a meditator continuously contemplates that mentality and materiality are impermanent, that suffering is a fact of existence, and that the sense of a permanent self is a myth, his or her insight knowledge becomes sharper. The arising of the mind and body are no longer apparent, but what is apparent is their disappearance or deterioration. A meditator may find it fearful to see the deterioration of whatever phenomena is observed, but with the understanding that all conditioned phenomena are imperfect and full of dissatisfaction, disenchantment sets in. It is just like a fisherman who uses a bamboo basket for fishing. As he checks the basket to see whether he has caught a fish, his hand touches a fish. He is very happy, and he takes the fish out of the basket. He continues to fish, and when he checks the basket again, he again feels something slippery, like a fish. But when he pulls it out, he sees the three marks on the neck of what is a poisonous water snake. If he does not handle it properly, the snake will bite him and possibly kill him. The fisherman is no longer happy, but is now terrified. He feels revulsion towards the snake and wishes to be free of it. Therefore, he grabs the snake, swings it around its head three times, flings it away as far as possible, and then runs to dry land, where he feels safe and secure. Visuddhimagga. The same thing happens to a meditator. When knowledge arises, he sees that the mind and body, which he was once attached to and loved very much, are actually impermanent, suffering and not self. He will feel disenchanted and wish to be delivered from the mind and body, just as the fisherman wished to be delivered from the poisonous snake. There is nothing a meditator can do to be free from the entanglement of the mind and body, but to continue to contemplate the three characteristics, impermanence, suffering, and not self. The fisherman who wished to be free from the danger of the poisonous snake would be very careful in handling it, otherwise the snake might bite him. Thus, he had to weaken the poisonous snake until it was unable to hurt anyone, and then fling it away as far as possible. In the same way, when a meditator continues to contemplate the characteristics of impermanence, suffering, and not self of phenomena, the delusion of permanence, happiness, and a sense of self will weaken. As the meditator continues to contemplate the three characteristics, he gradually detaches from these three perceptions and feels equanimity towards all conditioned phenomena. This is the knowledge of equanimity towards conditioned formations, Sankarupekanana. When the knowledge of equanimity towards conditioned formations is steady, the meditator will see Nibbana. There arises in him or her, for the first time, the path consciousness of the stream enterer, an experience that has never before arisen in the long cycle of births, with Nibbana as its final goal. Arising at the same time is the knowledge of comprehending the truth of suffering, abandoning the origin of suffering, developing the path leading to the cessation of suffering, and directly realizing the cessation of suffering. In short, the Four Noble Truths become clear to him. If a meditator has sufficient parami and continues to develop the practice, he or she will attain arahatship and will be free from all mental defilements, thus attaining permanent liberation. This is how the Buddha guides beings to fully understand that materiality and mentality actually cannot be relied upon at all, until at last they will let go of attachment to them completely. Guiding the celestial beings. The Blessed One is also the teacher of gods. He did not only guide human beings, but at times also preached in the heavenly realms, helping to release celestial beings from their stress or lead them to Nibbana. Celestial beings are born into heavenly realms due to their good karma. However, residence in heaven is not permanent. Once the good karma that caused rebirth in heaven has been exhausted in that life, heavenly beings will be reborn into other realms in accordance with their karma. If good karma meets with all the necessary conditions to ripen during their dying moment, they will be reborn into a heavenly world or human world, or conversely, if bad karma ripens, they will be reborn into one of the four woeful states. Human beings are blinded by ignorance and fettered by sensual desire. So are celestial beings. They also need the Buddha's guidance to be free from mental defilements that block the path to Nibbana. Generally, celestial beings only came to the Buddha in the middle of the night. Among them, some came to pay homage to the Buddha, some came to seek advice from the Buddha, and some came to ask for guidance on how to practice. In Devaputta Samyutta, it is recorded that a young god named Subrahma appears before the Blessed One and explains the problem weighing on his heart. Quote, "Always anxious is this mind. The mind is always agitated. About problems present and future, please tell me the release from fear." End quote. The Buddha answered, quote, "Not apart from awakening and austerity, not apart from sense restraint, not apart from relinquishing all, do I see any safety for living beings." End quote. Samyutta Nikaya 1. The root of fear is clinging. Covered by the darkness of ignorance, we cling to our possessions, our family, our achievement and status, our name and fame, and most tenaciously of all, we cling to our mind and body, or in other words, the five aggregates of form, feeling, perception, volitional formations, and consciousness, taking them to be permanent, pleasurable, and an enduring self. Not seeing the five aggregates correctly, we cling to them, cherish them, and fear giving up what we cherish. We try to preserve what we cling to, and forget that whatever comes to be must pass away. The Buddha did not see any safety apart from awakening to the truth. He advised the Deva Subrahma to practice austerity and restraint of the senses, until the wisdom arose to see directly how whatever arises is subject to cessation, and then Subrahma could finally relinquish not only the objects of clinging, but clinging to a sense of self. There are many discourses that the Buddha preached to celestial beings. One of them is the famous Great Blessing Sutta, Mahamangala Sutta, Sutta Nipata 2.4. At that time, many men had their own views about blessings. Some said that hearing the chirping of birds in the early morning is a kind of blessing. Others said that seeing a certain color is a kind of blessing too. For 12 years, men and deities in the heavens pondered and discussed blessings, but never came to a satisfactory conclusion. At last, the deities concluded that only the Buddha would have a solution to their doubts. Thus, they came to the human world to seek advice from the Buddha. The Buddha taught them the famous discourse, Mahamangala Sutta. This sutta is a guide to ethics and morality for life's journey, starting with not to associate with fools, but to associate with the wise, and ending with the verse, "A mind unruffled by worldly vicissitudes, free from sorrow, free from defilements, liberated from fear." The sutta describes how a person begins by disassociating from fools and associating with the wise, gradually shapes his or her good character by fulfilling the duties of a good person in everyday life, and then trains further, step by step, to reach the final goal, the bliss of nibbana. After hearing the discourse, countless heavenly beings were freed from the bonds of craving and realized the path and fruit of noble ones. Similarly, when the Buddha expounded his first discourse, Turning the Wheel of the Dhamma, Dhamma Chaka Pavattana Sutta, many devas from different realms came and listened to him and attained the noble path and fruition. Teaching with an open hand. Being a great teacher, the Buddha never kept the truth he knew a secret. In ancient India, prominent teachers often kept some of their knowledge secret for self-protection. However, the honorable esteemed Buddha never kept secret any of what he knew. The Buddha told Ananda, quote, "There is nothing, Ananda, with regard to the teachings, that the Tathagata holds with the closed fist of a teacher who keeps some things back." End quote. Digha Nikaya 16. The Buddha, as a teacher, was also like a caravan leader. A caravan leader leads a caravan home safely, getting everyone across the burning hot desert, across a bandit-infested wilderness, across a wild beast-infested wilderness, through famine, and through miseries, to reach a land of safety. Thus, the Buddha is teacher of gods and humans, Satta Deva Manusanam. End of chapter.